Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome, everyone, to the Damage Report on a Thursday. I am back. I'm Francesca Fiorentini. I'm not John Iadarola. John Iadarola is currently undergoing a lot of monkey med treatment for his illness, which is not COVID. But Dr. Johnny Bananas is on the case, so he is being well looked after. Don't you worry, your pretty little heads. Welcome to another edition of the Damage Report. I'm here. We got so much good news. Well, not good. You know, it's good because it's plentiful, but it's also bizarre. And with me for the first time on this show is writer and organizer who's worked with Rebel HQ here on TYT, Caroline Johnson. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's so great to be here. And yes. I'm just really glad that the monkey bananas thing wasn't some story I missed that we were covering, because I got very nervous a couple minutes ago, but glad that was cleared up.
Is there a monkey that's been given an MD, just a rapid online course?
I mean, it sounds so plausible for our news cycle, like with the horse, like whatever medicine. I was like, oh my God, where was this on the rundown? But yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, and you also are an organizer and a reporter for Knock LA, which does incredible reporting here on like different social justice movements and sort of what's going on, especially with like the unhoused population, police violence. Yeah. Tell me about the story you're working on right now.
Yeah, so Knock LA is an independent journalism outlet that's focused exclusively on issues in Los Angeles, and a big issue that we are facing across California, as many people probably know. Gavin Newsom just faced a recall that, there was a lot of talk about how dangerous this was going to be for Newsom, and then it sort of collapsed. But what this has done is it has trickled down into local politics. In LA City Council alone, or LA alone, there have been three notable recall campaigns. Two have already failed, but one is actually charging ahead. It's focused on the West Side. Council member Mike Bonin, who notably is the only council member who has lived experience of being homeless. And he, is one of, if not the most compassionate, most solution driven advocate for housing our population. Basically, it's the same kind of people as the Newsom recall who are these far right. A lot of them don't actually live in LA. They have ties to the Republican Party nationally. And they are forcing him into a recall. And the craziest thing about this situation is that they are going to spend, if they get enough signatures, they're going to spend $1.2 million forcing a recall a month before he's up for reelection. So the recall would happen in about May. He's up for reelection in June. So it's a profound waste of money. Basically, if you're in LA at a farmer's market and someone tries to get you to sign on a signature to have this recall, don't sign anything. Just don't sign anything.
Just to like make them go away, like I usually do. I'm like, I guess. Why are all your papers dirty? This is weird.
Exactly.
Anyway, okay. Yes, the recall system totally broken in this state. So yeah, among many other things that are broken in this state. But we got to get to the news. Before we do, I just have an announcement to make. Very exciting for members only. Again, tyt.com/joinmembers. You're getting Nina Turner's first show on the network that debuts today. Power Hour with Nina Turner, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Speaking truth to power, fight the power, get the power, use the power, Power Hour. That's right. I was paid $50 extra to say that. I'm just kidding. With all that, Caroline, you ready to do this?
Oh yeah,
let's get into it. All right. So, In the fallout of the mounted chasing of Haitian migrants trying to seek refuge, asylum in the United States, in the wake of those images that we saw with Border Patrol armed with whips and honestly shouting epithets and being incredibly just openly racist and xenophobic towards those migrants. The special envoy to Haiti of the Biden administration has resigned. So the US special envoy for Haiti resigned in protest over the deportation of Haitian migrants. The US decision to send migrants to a country where armed gangs controlled daily life was inhumane, Daniel Foote said in his resignation letter. Right, okay, so not only do we have the chasing down of migrants in that incredibly inhumane way, but the actual deportation of them as well. So we know that flights are continuing. There have been, you know, at least 3 to 5 flights, something like that. We're talking about, you know, thousands of migrants. And all of this is happening under Title 42, which is this emergency order that was enacted or enabled by the Trump administration because of COVID-19 and the pandemic, and that Biden wants continued. In fact, the administration is fighting in court to have this continued, to be able to continue to deport Haitian migrants back to a country that's so unstable. So this is from Daniel Foote, again, in that resignation letter, special envoy to Haiti, says, I will not be associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants. Daniel Foote said in a letter addressed to the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, that circulated publicly on Thursday. Foote is a career diplomat named in July as special envoy to Haiti, said conditions in the country were so bad that US officials were confined to secure compounds. He said the collapsed state was unable to support the influx of returning migrants. So think about that, right? He's saying that my American diplomats in Haiti are not even leaving their compounds. Like, they're under, these folks are unsafe, and these folks have like all the privileges in the world, right? They're American diplomats in a foreign country. So imagine what a Haitian migrant with a family, displaced, fleeing violence, imagine how they're feeling, imagine what they're coming back to. Caroline, your thoughts on this sort of act of protest, one of the few in the early ones we've seen in this administration.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. We got very used to these sort of defiant resignations under the Trump administration. And, you know, it's hard. I can't think of a resignation that's been as powerful as this one. And you know what? I really think it's a great use of his power. I mean, the images that have been coming out of the border are truly inexcusable. And the administration's response, frankly, has been as well. I mean, if folks saw the video of Kamala Harris, like, if you didn't know who she was, you would not know that she was the vice president of the administration that was overseeing what's happening. I mean, I think resignations like this are super important because they prove that you know, the Democrats are in power. It's not an excuse anymore to just use the language of being shocked and outraged. You control all three branches of government, and you know, that's obviously not an easy thing. And the border politics around the border is always fraught with so much tension, but you need to, you know, you have to stop shirking the responsibility and take some of it on. And I think that we deserve answers rather than, oh my gosh, this is awful. This isn't who we are. You know, that's
We'll start an investigation.
Yeah, like this isn't who America is. It's just, it's insane. This is your America right now. And you know, we took the Trump administration to task, rightfully so, time and time again. And this is no excuse to stop doing that. This is who America is at this moment, and we need answers, and we need to reckon with that. And you know, the moral outrage in statements on Twitter just isn't gonna cut it.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when they don't actually have concrete answers other than, hey, Customs and Border Patrol is going to investigate Customs and Border Patrol. Mm-hmm, like, how is that at all? What we mean, again, this is the problem, and I will get into, there is a story of police violence later in the show. But this is the problem with police investigating themselves and departments investigating themselves. Look, this special envoy to Haiti has, like, imagine, think about the things that have happened under his time, right? You've got the assassination of the president, Jovenel Moise. You have an earthquake that killed 2,000 people and counting, displaced many, many thousands. And now you have this Haitian migrant crisis, and you see that the folks that you're trying to build relationships with, you're trying to create some sort of stability, are being specifically targeted. Look, I mean, I'm not saying that we haven't, that there haven't been mounted CBP that have chased migrants off of the border. But this is the first time we are seeing it, right? And this is the and it should not be lost on anyone, the fact that these are Black migrants. And so imagining, you know, at what point you feel like you can no longer do good in that administration in your role, because no one's actually empowering you to do so, because you're being set up for failure. And honestly, I mean, and this is the thing, it's very interesting, right? We're however many months into, you know, 8 months into this administration. And you've got Customs and Border Patrol doing this. You've got Jen Psaki, the press secretary, unable to explain it. You've got the vice president, Kamala Harris, unable to explain it. No one's able to explain it. Maybe that is because Customs and Border Patrol are out of control, that nobody has a leash on them, right? That they should be defunded, that they, that ICE and Customs and Border Patrol, by the way, CBP, I believe, and I don't have the stats right now, but I remember I did a story on the border for AJ Plus years ago. They have more money than pretty much like all of other federal agents. They have more money than like the FBI, I believe. They have some of like the most incredible funding sources, right? And a lot of, I mean, people are always talking about, even Democrats, we got to put more CBP officers. Well, you talk to organizers on the border and they say that, yeah, they're just sitting there in their cars. They're just sitting there in their like air conditioned, like, you know, giant Humvees, like watching Breaking Bad, which I feel like is what they would be watching, or something ridiculous about, you know, like they are overfunded, right? And we see that here in the ways that militarism is not the answer and is not the way to solve this. I want to just go to a different angle on this because in response to the migrant crisis on the border of Texas and Mexico, of the US and Mexico, the Biden administration is taking a different tact. They see the crisis happening on the border and they're saying, we need more detentions. And they are now floating the idea to open or reopen a migrant detention camp in Guantanamo. That's right. The Biden administration is now ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is inviting tenders, so inviting bids for private contractors to run the migrant operations center on the US naval base close to the prison compounds housing the remaining 39 detainees held in the war on terror. Okay, so this is a facility that not a lot of people know about, but it's been in existence. The little known immigrant holding facility on the base has a capacity of 120 people, the records say, and it will have an estimated daily population of 20 people, according to the solicitation bids issued Friday by DHS. According to the solicitation, formal bidding is expected to take place later this fall. Okay, so 120 people, that's the capacity. Think about that a little bit, and then look at the number of migrants on the US-Mexico border. How are we doing that? Well, there's more, because there's a sort of history here with this detention center. So the service provider, this is from the contract, the open contract, the open bids, shall be responsible to maintain on-site the necessary equipment to erect temporary housing facilities for a population that exceeds 120 and up to 400 migrants in a surge event. Okay, that's still not probably the numbers, even if you were to do something like this that could house migrants that are currently coming in. The reason that I'm relating it to the Haitian migrant crisis on the border right now is because it appears like that's what the Biden administration is also thinking, because in this solicitation, it adds at least 10% of the augmented personnel must be fluent in Spanish and Haitian Creole. Air transportation to and from the facility is also the sole responsibility of the service provider. Anyone imagine that Eric Prince will not swoop in right now with his $6,000 flights and be like, hey, anybody want to get over to Guantanamo? Caroline, thoughts on housing migrants fleeing Haiti at the naval base of Guantanamo?
Yeah, it It's so shocking and horrifying. And it's really fascinating too that, you know, the journalists who uncovered this story were able to do so because of that very brief hint of that the enforcers, if you will, need to speak Haitian Creole, which, you know, is a dead giveaway that that is exactly what is going to happen with these individuals at the border. And then, of course, a member of the Trump administration came out and said, oh, it's this specific part of Guantanamo. You know, it's a different area. It is a migrant holding cell. We are not going to the prison. It doesn't matter. Guantanamo Bay is a symbol of America's tyranny, frankly, across the world, and the horrible conditions that we subject human beings to, regardless of their background. It's been, you know, promised to be closed for so long. And the fact that it is now being used by the administration that won this election because of the hard work of a lot of activists and organizers who, you know, wouldn't allow Trump to be reelected for the main issue of his border policies. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that this administration is, you know, it doesn't matter that it's a separate holding cell. The symbolism of Guantanamo Bay is it basically just displays the failures of American foreign policy just right out there. And mm-hmm. it's really sad and shocking. And I'm very grateful to the reporters who were able to take that little nugget of information and just say, like, this is what's happening.
Yeah. And for context, this is not the first time that migrants seeking refuge in the United States have been held at Guantanamo. So let's just talk about it. This the migrant camp was first set up in 1991 and was intended to hold Cuban asylum seekers. Ultimately, it was used to detain about 34,000 Haitians and roughly the same number of Cubans until it was wound down by the Obama administration. And it has not been used to hold migrants since 2017. Okay. Under George H.W. Bush in 91 to 93, Haitians sought to flee the country to seek asylum in Florida, and 12,000 were sent to Guantanamo Bay. So there's varying numbers, but apparently, yes, under William Barr, none other than fascist Barney Rubble, oversaw that program. Now, I'm just stunned by the numbers because none of it's adding up, right? Like, I don't understand how, and I think we all know the answer, how facilities that are meant for something like 120 people or, you know, 400 at most people could be holding 12,000, 30,000 migrants. And that's because it's just overcrowding, right? That's because, oh, we don't treat migrants like they're human beings. Problem solved. We overcrowd jails. We overcrowd jails for American citizens as well in this country all the time. The DHS is saying, however, that despite this reporting, despite their letter soliciting, saying, hey, highest bidder and or best bidder or whomever, please open this facility once again, DHS is saying it is not sending and will not send Haitian nationals being encountered at the southwest border to the Migrant Operations Center in Guantanamo Bay. The MOC has not been used for decades to process migrants interdicted at sea for third country resettlement. The request for information recently posted is a typical routine step in a contract renewal and unrelated to the southwest border. Okay, so if it's unrelated, then bro, bad timing, dude. Like, why are you doing this now, DHS? Like, why? Or ICE, you know, it's like, and once again, if ICE, who's asking for this renewal, which is under the head of DHS, which is under the head of the Biden administration, like, are we not talking to one another? Could it be once again that ICE is out of control? Are they operating on their own? Is CBP and ICE, should they maybe be dismantled? Yeah. I mean, that's my personal opinion, but hey, I'm just here to report the news, buddy. You know what I'm saying? I don't have opinions. No, but it is, you know, I think it is a question, obviously, of like, what does happen, right? That I think, you know, everyone from, you know, the far right to all folks who are like, well, how should we treat and what should we do with the, you know, thousands of migrants seeking refuge? And I think for me, the answer is always, hey, treat them like they're human. If you start from a place of the fact that they're human, then you won't chase them down with whips. Then you won't deport them en masse to a country that is falling apart. There may in fact be detention, but you won't hold them there for months and months on end. You won't separate them from their families. You allow them to be processed. You allow them to go into the United States. And then there are many ways of tracking people who come to the United States who have asylum cases, right? You staff up when it comes to the immigration courts that are overrun, that are totally not, they're overrun because the number of migrants, they're overrun because they're underfunded, right? You got CBP getting all the funds, and yet the actual courts that are processing asylum claims, I mean, they basically all admit that they are in over their heads. Final thoughts, Caroline, on this?
I just think what you said about treating people like human beings needs to be restated, put on billboards, just across the country. I think, you know, and this is a big issue we also see with how people in the country treat unhoused populations of American citizens, of veterans. It really is a shocking twist in your thinking when you finally say, hey, look, that person on the street or that person being whipped by a Border Patrol agent has, you know, is a sentient being and has just as many feelings and emotions and family members and loved ones as I do. When we make that shift in perspective, and it's truly revolutionary. It really is. And I think that's why images like this are so powerful coming out of the border, is because it's the rare, rare case where we can actually see the brutality of, you know, decades of administrations that we just haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And it's really tragic that it has to be these awful images that, you know, no one wants to see. But we have to recognize that you have to start from a place of recognizing a common humanity. Mm-hmm. Nationality, ethnicity is all secondary to those things if you don't have just a general underlying belief that, you know, human beings can experience pain and need supportive community. Yeah. So I think that's a super important point, and one that transcends into so many issues that we're dealing with in America as well, on a policy level, and it's just going to get worse. I mean, globally, this story, what we need to do is just going to get harder and harder to do.
100%. Yeah, we need to decriminalize the border. Also, that's the main mm-hmm. thing. Stop treating people who cross the border as criminals. It's not a criminal act to cross the border. Sorry.
No.
All right.
Yeah, just quickly, the Biden administration said in their own words that Haiti is a country on the brink of collapse. So anyone, you know, Dan Crenshaw the other day was saying that asylum seekers are faking their need for asylum. So anyway, just saying, by the administration's own definition, Haiti needs our help.
Yes. All right. Let's go to our first break. We're gonna be reading comments. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini here with Caroline Johnson. Just a quick reminder to y'all, if you haven't liked the stream, what are you doing with your life? Like the stream, share the stream right now, do all the things, listen to the Bituation Room podcast. That's my podcast. Don't do it now, do it later. It's a great show. We've got another show on Sunday. I'll tell you about it later. But let's go to this next story.
No sane first world nation opens its borders to the world, promising the poorest people on the planet that they can have endless free taxpayer funded services if they show up and break your laws. That's not just stupid, it's suicidal. For generations, middle class Americans have had access to the best healthcare in the world, but not anymore. That's over for good. Our system cannot handle this many destitute newcomers, period. Imagine what hospitals are going to look like a year from now. How about schools? What Joe Biden is doing now will change this country forever. So again, why is he doing it?
That is, God, what's his name again? I don't know. It's like doughy and like clanny. It'll come to me. Anyway, that was that guy talking last night on his show, How Am I Not a Nazi? About the border crisis and what's going on right now with the Haitian migrants, saying, what will happen to our schools if migrants are allowed in? What will happen to our hospitals? Huh, Caroline, what is happening to our hospitals right now in the middle of COVID, thanks to an entire party that has fomented misinformation and disinformation about COVID-19? They're being completely overrun. Yeah. They are understaffed. Mm-hmm. They are totally, and that's just American citizens doing that work. Yeah, what's happening in schools?
That's all us. Yeah.
That's on us. thoughts on that opening, that opener?
I mean, you have to give him credit. Just the propaganda is so flawless sometimes with him. Again, can't remember his name, but I particularly love how he says the middle class people have had access to the best healthcare in the world. It's just like, okay, what about the people who aren't middle class? Like, he knows, like, there is an element of knowing, yeah, what middle class that is rapidly dwindling. And then also, like, is he being funny? Everyone in the world laughs at our healthcare system and how inaccessible and expensive it is. And this is all pre-COVID. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that the left has been galvanized, one of the leading reasons, is because healthcare in this country is exorbitant if you aren't a millionaire. So him just like sliding over the issue that millions upon millions of Americans don't get access to this best healthcare, I think is just hilarious. And then I also love the endless free taxpayer funded services. Trying to rack my brain, what could those be? You know, the living in Los Angeles, our public transit is far from robust. Our schools across the nation, our public schools are, you know, being constantly underfunded. Maybe he means the police, because that's kind of the only taxpayer funded service I can think of that is really going above and beyond what they're needed for in society.
Right, who's unduly targeting them themselves. I mean, once again, this is one of the myths that he spouts in this monologue, and we'll get to the second one because he's going places. Oh, don't worry, he's going places with this. But yes, undocumented migrants somehow cashing in on the system, getting everything for free. You know, things like Social Security. What? Undocumented migrants, by definition, are unable to access the services that they do pay taxes on, right? That they actually they pay for. They are docked that pay oftentimes and are unable to cash in on those services. And what happens, you know, in states like California, their undocumented migrants under Gavin Newsom have been able to access things like healthcare, right? And Medicaid, which I believe is important, because what happens when undocumented migrants are unable to access healthcare? They inevitably go to emergency rooms. Necessary, like many, many people who don't have healthcare will go to emergency rooms. And who pays for that? That is taxpayers. In fact, studies have been done that show it is cheaper to offer universal healthcare to both documented and undocumented people living inside of the United States than it is to allow folks to either die, live in, you know, be sick, spread, you know, spread things like a virus, or go to the emergency room. But look, he is not about having an honest conversation about what it is and how it is that migrants live in this country and undocumented people live in this country. That obviously is not the goal. The goal of this entire monologue is to get to the great replacement theory, right? The white nationalist idea that somehow Democrats are, quote unquote, importing voters in order to replace white people. That's it, that people of color are being imported to replace white people. And here's how he gets there. First, he starts by going to a Biden quote from the year 2015 that is just honestly talking about the changing demographics and the fact that many, many people are coming and seeking refuge and a new life inside the United States. Take a look.
An unrelenting stream of immigration, nonstop, nonstop. Folks like me who were Caucasian of European descent, for the first time in 2017, will be in an absolute minority in the United States of America. Absolute minority. Fewer than 50% of the people in America from then and on will be white European stock. That's not a bad thing. That's a source of our strength.
An unrelenting stream of immigration. But why? Well, Joe Biden just said it. To change the racial mix of the country. That's the reason. To reduce the political power of people whose ancestors lived here and dramatically increase the proportion of Americans newly arrived from the third world. And then Biden went further. He said that non-white DNA is the quote source of our strength. Imagine saying that. This is the language of eugenics. It's horrifying. But there's a reason Biden said it. In political terms, this policy is called the Great Replacement, the replacement of legacy Americans with more obedient people from faraway countries. They brag about it all the time. But if you dare to say it's happening, they will scream at you with maximum hysteria. And here you have Joe Biden confirming his motive on tape with a smile on his face. No one who talks like this should ever be the president of the United States.
Okay, there is a lot to unpack in that just full fash clip. You know, every clip of Tucker Carlson, oops, I said his name, is fashy. But like this one goes all the way. This one is some 8chan, you know, Telegram message board type conversation, which is openly saying that, you know, non-white DNA, things like this, you know, the great replacement theory and all that. And that Democrats are doing this. So there's a couple of things. First, let's take the Biden quote that he actually uses as his evidence that, oh, somehow Biden is advocating the great replacement theory because he wants to replace people of European descent as if that those are original Americans at all with people of non-European descent, of non-white DNA. I don't know about you, Caroline, but that quote from Biden did not sound, it is not that at all. If anything, it sounded a little bit like we're getting replaced, Europeans are getting replaced. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that. It almost sounds like he's agreeing with Tucker Carlson in that quote, not disagreeing with him.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I thought. At first I was like, where is this going? And then, yeah, in my opinion, he takes a little, Biden takes a little too long getting to the fact that this is a good thing. Like, because for that majority of that first statement, you're kind of just like, okay, you're using the word white European stock, which is a little like just a little odd. But it's, yeah, he's totally, you know, the news reporter who shall not be named is totally just using any clip that he can find Biden sort of referring to this great replacement theory and just like smashing it together with absolutely no real conclusive or engaging like thought process behind it. Like the great replacement theory is not a political theory, it's a conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, the only thing that people really need to know is that the Biden administration is on track to expel more people than Trump. The number of immigrants in detention under Biden has increased 70%. So the, as always, the numbers and the facts just aren't on the right wing side. And it's just frustrating that we have to subject ourselves to the conversation about this ridiculous conspiracy theory when the conversation needs to be about our own party and how we can actually hold them accountable for the things they've promised us and not waste any time with these ridiculous theories about how the Democrats are trying to replace people. It's like, no, actually a lot of Democrats in power are just as conservative as Republicans on the issue of immigration, and that's what we need to be focusing on.
Yes. No, exactly. I mean, if anything, he's drawing my attention to that Biden quote, which is, you know, yeah, white European stock. And then it's sort of like, it reminds me of the Seinfeld episode that does not age well, where they talk about someone being gay or like thinking that they're gay, and they're like, not that there's anything wrong with that, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that might have been funny for the 90s, but now you're like, eh, don't say that there's anything wrong with that laugh line, right? Because it sounds like what Biden does, like, you know, there's a lot of immigrants of color coming to the States, not that there's anything wrong with that, but you're sort of saying that there is something wrong with that. I mean, and Biden is honestly stating facts. And so this is the thing with Tucker, is basically taking Biden stating facts. Yes, there are non-white immigrants coming to the United States, and saying, see, he wants non-white immigrants coming to the United States. And say, and Biden saving is, you know, behind by saying, which is a source of our strength, which is performative for sure, but like is definitely something that the United States in principle says it is founded on, right? Says whether you call it, you know, like the melting pot, the fruit salad or whatever salad, Waldorf, I don't know what we're working with right now. You know, like that yes, diversity is our strength, but of course in Trumpian times that is no longer the case. And here you have Tucker, and the best part about Tucker doing all this is that he's like, but as soon as you say it, they get so mad. Everyone gets mad. And again, the politics of just creating liberal outrage is like what they're in it for. You know, it's what Tucker and what he wants his audience to be in it for. He doesn't necessarily want you to believe in the great replacement theory, but he wants you to believe in it because it makes liberals mad, right? Not because you believe it, but you kind of do believe it, but maybe you are a Nazi and like maybe you went to one meeting and like maybe you're on like a, you know, a group chat that shares, you know, Holocaust memes, but also it makes liberals cry. The grooming is insane. Like I'm just like, how many advertisers, like who is left? Do we like, I don't know, is Dutch Glow still advertising on, that's a very nice, you can polish your wooden ducks with Dutch Glow. Anyway, who is left what, advertising
that's such a
for
shame.
Fox?
Why would Dutch Glow do that?
That's, I mean, Dutch Glow has principles, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like Dutch Glow, yeah, stands for something.
Yeah, oh my gosh. No, it really is troubling. And I mean, yeah, going back to his point about, it's just interesting to think about who Tucker's audience is, because I think we all know that he has a huge audience. And I think him sort of earlier in the clip saying that quote about, you know, middle class Americans, that really speaks to who his audience is. And as we know, with the wealth gap dividing, those middle class Americans are either, you know, a majority of them are getting poorer, some of them are getting richer. And you just have to fear that if he is, you know, siloing his audience so much, because for a couple of years now it's been that, like, you know, just general conservative Republicans probably wouldn't agree to any of this. But if he is totally like narrowing his audience and even expanding, mm-hmm, but just going full mask off with these comments, it kind of begs the question of like, why do people even need to go into like 8chan or 4chan or all of these things? Then I know we're talking about a little bit later, but like it kind of defeats the purpose for those secret outlets. Now it's just out there. It's on TV night after night, and there's, yeah, something so addicting about it, clearly. And yeah, I guess it just goes to show that there's something really addicting about lies and conspiracy theories and someone sort of feeding into your worst instincts, which I, yes, think is the worst part about him and his show, is he takes, you know, a kernel of what someone might be worried about and gives it legitimacy and gives it you know, a theoretical political theory name and says, again, yeah, I'm not saying anything, but here's the information. And it's like, it just, the right wing just operates on targeting people's worst instincts. And yeah, like we said before, you really have to operate on the assumption that people are good and human beings deserve respect. And that's just not what they're doing, because it's easier. It's easier to do that. That
100%.
Yeah, nasty approach.
For sure. All right, we got to take our second break, but we won't come back. But I don't speak anymore. I'm going to speak backwards when we come back. Be right back. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini, Caroline Johnson. Remember, guys, after this show, Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie, youtube.com/indisputable TYT. That's where you go to watch the doc do his damn thing. 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific. Don't miss that right after this. But let's move into our next story. So it appears that blood is not thicker than water and definitely not thicker than money, especially when your last name is Trump. Former President Donald J. Trump is now trying to put the squeeze on his own niece, filing a lawsuit on Tuesday accusing Mary L. Trump, the New York Times, and three of its reporters of conspiring in an insidious plot to improperly obtain his confidential tax records and exploit their use in news articles and a book. Oh, buddy, if we're gonna sue everyone who made a book off of you, we're gonna be in lawsuits for a long time. You sure you want more? Are you sure you want more? But more on the lawsuit. It accuses the Times and three of its investigative reporters, Suzanne Craig, David Barstow, and Russell Butner, of relentlessly seeking out Mary Trump as a source of information and convincing her to turn over documents. The suit claims that reporters were aware of the settlement agreement that barred her from disclosing the documents. So apparently, there's some, if you're a Trump, kind of like, you know, NDA agreement, you know, if you got like a crappy pair of socks from Fred Trump one Christmas, then you can never speak about what the Trump family does. I don't know. I imagine it's something like that. But there was supposedly a confidentiality agreement, according to the lawsuit, that this action, the entire revealing, right, of the tax documents, breached a confidentiality agreement that was part of the settlement of litigation involving the will of former president's father, Fred C. Trump, who died in 1999. Trump is seeking now $100 million in damages. And Rudy Giuliani is very excited. He's like, I'm finally gonna get paid. Yes, praise Jesus. I don't do a very good Rudy. So just a response. I want to go to this tweet from a response from the reporter about this, right? So this is Suzanne Craig, who is being named in this lawsuit, right, saying that there was a conspiracy. And she writes, I knocked on Mary Trump's door. She opened it. I think they call that journalism. Yeah. Caroline, have you ever been accused of conspiracy in your reporting? For talking to sources?
Not that I know of, but if the bar is that you can't ask anyone anything ever, then I'm definitely guilty of that. I hope I'm like racking my brain, you know, trying to figure out what loops I need to close in my own life right now, because it doesn't look good. Doesn't look good for reporters.
Is your last name Trump?
No, so I'm probably good.
Probably good.
Okay, but I mean, in all seriousness, like what you were saying before, all these lawsuits bring up so many questions. Truly, why is he doing this? I mean, why is he continuously doing this? We all know he's not a billionaire. Like the whole point of releasing the tax records in that bombshell New York Times article was revealing that he's really not as wealthy as his quote unquote empire would have us believe. So why is he doing this? He's going to lose. He has lost similar lawsuits in the past, I think because the terms of that confidentiality agreement were like super vague and obviously didn't account for the fact that he would someday become the president of the United States, which is still hard to believe. But I don't know why he continues to do this, because it's also not like it's bringing, you know, it's doing the exact same thing. It's giving more fuel to the fire of Mary Trump. And like, you know, she's definitely, you know, using her platform. So they're accusing her of trying to ruin him and trying to like become famous basically, but in filing this lawsuit, they're just continuing that. So I don't know. Do you have any, like, what am I missing? Why, what is the point of this?
I, I mean, I did see Eric Trump on Maria Bartiromo basically breaking down in a tear saying the subpoenas, we just got so many subpoenas. So I think they are being named in many lawsuits and they are the defendants in those cases. So you know, I think they're coming at him real fast. And the only thing that was protecting Trump from any accountability, whether it was from the Trump organization's like nonprofit status, to Trump University, to any of the other ways that he swindled folks, to the number of people who he basically got to donate triple what they wanted to donate in all of the email fundraising emails that he sent out and his campaign sent out. The only thing protecting him from any of that was staying in the White House. And now that he is not in the White House, I mean, straight up, my man did not want to be president anymore. He just wanted to avoid any responsibility for his crimes. And also, I mean, again, the best thing that could have happened to Trump, you just ride out your celebrity lifestyle. You're just super 80s weird hair, you know, like creepo, you know, just status quo. No one would have come forward with as many rape allegations as they've had necessarily. No one would have looked into your tax documents. But of course, Mary Trump, the niece of Donald Trump, yeah, one too many cheap gifts on Christmas, and that's what happens. She basically began to speak out in the later part of the Trump administration, and these tax documents were part of it, handing them over to the New York Times. So the documents, this is just so y'all know, the documents that Ms. Trump provided were that basis of the 2018 article that delved into what the Times called Mr. Trump's history of tax dodging and outright fraud, according to the lawsuit. The Times report cast doubt on Mr. Trump's claim that he was a self-made billionaire, remember that? Who rose to wealth and fame with the help of his father and a real estate developer. Instead, the investigation found that Mr. Trump inherited the equivalent of at least $413 million, much of it through dubious tax schemes. Yeah, we all remember $750. That's how much in federal taxes Trump paid 1 year. No, not even 1 year. That was over many years. I've put that again in the box of hurt that I have in the back of my head, where it's like, sad fact goes here. 2 million people in the prison system in the United States, sad fact goes back here. But any more thoughts on this, and Caroline, and sort of, is he gonna get off, right? Like, what is going to happen? First of all, I don't know how much legs his own lawsuit has. It's just gonna be back and forth on this.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really good point about how, yeah, he never expected to be president, and that was shielding him for his entire time in office for all of the shady business things he had been doing his entire career before then. And yeah, just finishing it off, I'm totally with you that I if there's one thing that's super confusing about Trump to me is like, just live your life now. You ruined enough democracy for one lifetime. Like, just go. I loved how on we were talking on the Power panel 2 weeks ago about how he was like, he was commentating on a boxing match in Florida, and I'm like, yes, do that, you know, just live your truth, live your dreams, stop ruining everyone's lives for eternity. I bet.
Just get pec implants like Ren did on Ren and Stimpy. He became this new guy. Go become a WWF wrestler. Mm-hmm. You know, like, get tan. You know what I mean? You don't have to use any more bronzer. Yeah. Like, there are so many things you could do. But again, and this is actually, it is a warning shot, and it's sort of revealing, right? Trump revealed and pulled back the sort of, like, you know, I imagine like a log with a bunch of termites and disgusting like grubs underneath, very Lion King, except anyway, the point is, he revealed so much about our political system, which is that if you want to avoid accountability for your white collar crimes, your tax schemes, your tax fraud, your insider trading, run for office. If you want to avoid responsibility for the, you know, sexual assault claims, for for bullying people, run for office, right? Especially as a Republican. Don't run as a Democrat. No. They resign eventually. Run for Republican office. That is the way you can avoid responsibility. That's the way you can continue to, you know, move everything into a non-disclosed like account over here, even though he didn't even do that. Anyway, we will see where this goes. We will see how Mary Trump stands up to his uncle again. I mean, it's beautiful. I love that it's like the reverse of giving your niece $20 every birthday or whatever. You know, it's like just he's slowly clawing back and taking back that money. All right, we've got more after this. Thank you so much, Caroline, for joining me on Linear. Stay tuned on YouTube.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.